views and opinions expressed on this podcast show are solely those of Everything's EHC's guests and hosts. These views and opinions do not necessarily represent those of the San Francisco Lighthouse for the Blind, Enchanted Hills Camp, or Maceo.net. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy the show.
All right, these are the final interviews, and I've been talking with the people who live on site here at Enchanted Hills Camp after the Lighthouse programming is over, and I have another guest here at Everything EHC. Please introduce yourself.
Hello, my name is George Wurzel.
George Wurzel, where are you from, George?
Originally was born in Saginaw, Michigan. It takes 4 days to hitchhike from there, I've heard.
Saginaw, okay, so I'm going to... We need to test that. 4 days to hitchhike?
From Saginaw, Michigan. That's according to Simon and Garfunkel.
So I'm just... Oh, yeah, you're right. Those are words. Oh. Man, it's all coming together now. Okay, so
a little kid, grew up on the corner of a great big huge farm that all my uncles ran. Spent a lot of time as a kid working on the farm, milking cows, baling hay, shoveling manure. Still shovel a lot of manure. And then we moved to Traverse City, Michigan, and pretty much grew up there. Went to a residential school for the blind, starting in third grade through 11th grade when they got tired of me and I got tired of them. I went to Traverse City.
Did you have vision then, even though you were going to schools for the blind?
I never had good vision. I started off out of the womb with really, really bad vision, probably... not vision good enough to really recognize people because you have all sorts of other clues, you know, what they smell like,
sure,
how
sure.
tall they are, you know, different kinds of things, what they sound like mostly. But I can't tell you if I really recognized them by seeing them. Never saw well enough to read standard print ever.
Gotcha.
At the time as a senior in high school, I had absolutely no vision.
Okay. So just give me a quick list of experiences... hobbies and or things that you have done up until this Enchanted Hills point.
So you say you got about 3 hours worth of tape left.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Just throw some things out there. Give us a little bit of, I've done this and I did that and I did this. I'm getting to a point here, so I want you to throw some things out there, and then we're gonna. Then I'm getting somewhere with this.
Started off, you know, as a young kid at the school for the blind, and got involved in sports. Was on the track team. Was on the wrestling team. Wrestled all the way through high school. Did well with that. Got involved in cross country skiing my junior year in high school, which followed me a long ways through life. I ended up on the U.S. Paralympic cross-country ski team and went to Geilo, Norway and competed in 1980. And then the results of that ended up on another cross-country ski trip, started on the Kola Peninsula in Russia and skied all the way across Russia, the Kola Peninsula of Russia, Finland, Sweden, all the way into Norway, a little over 500 miles. Been an avid backpacker, been an avid bicyclist, a lot of tandem bicycling, been an avid kayaker / canoer. Anything to get you outside.
You lived in a tent. I just heard that this morning.
I lived in a tent for... I didn't win any points with my new mother-in-law because we got married and my wife and I moved into a big tent and her mother just didn't think that was the appropriate place for her daughter to live.
Awesome.
Life is life.
I love it.
Also spent a huge amount of time a little bit later in life riding and raising and training Arabian horses and endurance horses.
Gotcha. And then, so that's plenty of life experience and lots of things. And then, amongst all of this, some of your jobs, some of your skill sets would be?
Started off as a kid doing odd jobs and different things. Started up, my very first job was working in the kitchen at the school for the blind, working as a pearl diver. And most of you who ever worked in a kitchen know that the pearl diver is a dishwasher. And so started off doing that, then moved up from there to work in the bakery a little bit at the kitchen, in the kitchen at the school for the blind, then shifted over and worked as a janitorial person, cleaning bathrooms and polishing halls and sweeping and mopping and all those fun things that you get to do as a janitorial person, cleaning up other people's messes. School for the blind that I went to was incredibly innovative and way ahead of its time. We had all kinds of vocational programs there. So I ended up in their mechanics program and became a Volkswagen mechanic and started my, in my 10th grade year in school working part-time at a Volkswagen dealership. And then through the summer and my 11th grade year, I worked at the Volkswagen dealership. Then moved on to Traverse City, Michigan for my senior year in high school and started my senior year in high school working part-time at a bicycle shop as a bicycle mechanic. In the bicycle shop in the wintertime, couldn't sell bicycles, so it was a ski shop, so became a ski mechanic, learned how to mount downhill bindings on skis, became a certified Salomon ski binding technician, which was a pretty intensive class to have to do that. There's a lot of legal issues that has to do with ski bindings and them not coming off your feet when you're going down the hill and people breaking legs. So
yeah,
there's a lot of liability there.
Insurance.
Yeah, and I went and took the class, and it was a 100-question practical, 100 questions as well as a practical test, and I got a perfect score on it. I was the only one in the class to get a perfect score.
Nice. That's outstanding. I used to ski on Salomon skis back in the day. I didn't know that. That was part of your history there, so I'm stoked about that. What else? Keep going. Give me some more.
You want to know what the worst job I ever had?
Yeah, let's hear the worst.
Worst job. Worse than cleaning out barns is the job I had for a short period of time because I wanted and needed to eat. I cleaned used bricks. It paid 2 cents a brick, and once you got to be a little more proficient at it, it would even pay you 2.5 cents a brick.
Wow.
So if you
Is
want
this
to,
like
if you
acid
want to make,
cleaning?
No, this was hammer and chisel. Get the old mortar
off.
In the hot sun in the middle of a field. There was no building, nothing, just outside.
Big pile of bricks in your hammer.
If you were lucky, the guy brought a bucket of warm. I mean, everybody around here at the camp always says, bring us a, a cooler of ice cold water. If we were lucky, the guy would bring us a bucket of warm water to use to have.
Right.
That by far the worst job I ever had. But I needed to eat, and if you could clean, 50 bricks an hour to his satisfaction, he'd take the ones he didn't like and throw them off and say, I'm not paying for that one, not paying, that one's chipped, and not doing that one. And then the next day you'd come back and see all those bricks were really gone. So he'd throw them off your pile and wouldn't pay for them. Then he'd come back and pick them up. So you did those bricks for free.
Wow. That does sound like a terrible, terrible job.
And
how long did you do that for? Oh, a day?
No, about, 3 weeks.
Yeah, oh, wow, that's
and
awful.
So if you could clean 50 bricks an hour, you could make a dollar an hour, not
wow,
all bad.
Wow, that's rough.
Yeah.
Okay, so that brings us to, I'm going to merge this all together here, George, because since I've known you in the past couple of years, I've noticed your online presence is also pretty strong because you have been a part of a lot of different projects and important projects, amazing projects, media, people's lives. You've been in some movies that I've seen. You kind of got everything going in the right direction. There's something magical about what you got going on that people are drawn to, that people see, which is bringing me to your woodworking, your art, your knowledge of woodworking, your wood shop. What are you doing here at Enchanted Hills Camp? I kind of gave it all away there, but tell me in your own words what you got going on as far as all of that is concerned.
Well, I moved from being a mechanic into the woodworking business because I was working at the Volkswagen dealership in the wintertime, and the service manager brought in a car. And if you live in northern climates, you know that in the wintertime cars are covered with snow and slush and crud and big snotty icicles that hang under the cars and everything, and they're just horrible on the bottom side. And he brought it in and said this was a friend of the owner's and it needed to be repaired right away. And I says, nah, let it sit there for a while to warm up and everything melt off. He says, no, it needs to be done right away. So I went over and was up on the hoist and I'm working on it. And the dirty snow and now just barely above frozen stuff is running down your arms. And, and I jokingly say that ran down the insides of your arms all the way and stopped in the tops of your boots, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And by the end of doing that project, I was fed up with it. And I walked over to the service manager and I says, "I'm done." He says, "Okay, see you tomorrow." And I said, "No, you don't understand. I'm done." He goes, "What do you mean you're done?" I said, "I quit." He goes, "Well, you can't just quit." And I says, "Watch me."
I'm out.
So I'm out of here. So that was the end of my Volkswagen fixing career for someone else. I fixed and worked on a huge amount of Volkswagens after that for other people and to buy them and resell them as a kid. Bought and sold a lot of old Volkswagens when I was a kid. And then, so that got me into the woodworking business, which has been pretty much my life since that point in time, since I was 19 years old. Started building lawn furniture, putting it out in the front yard. A guy came along and bought two chairs one day, which was really exciting. Someone who bought two of them at one time instead of just one. He came back 2 weeks later and says, "You want to build 100 of these?" I was in the woodworking business.
There you go.
A friend of mine was a boat builder, and I used to go hang out at his boat building shop and do a little bit of stuff with him. Guy came in there one day and wanted some showcases for his new store he was doing, and Chip said, "I don't have the time to do it, but George can." And after the guy left, I said, "Chip, I don't know anything about building a showcase." And he says, "It's just a wood box with glass on two sides." And he's right. I mean, when you break it down to the... And I since then in my life, I've got really, really, really good at breaking things down into the little elements. Sometimes tasks, if you look at the whole task, it looks monumental. If you want to build a dam and you go look at a dam, you say, "My God, you could never build a dam." But if you stop and think about it, all you have to do is just get a wheelbarrow and a shovel. And if you got enough time,
you can build a dam.
You can build a dam. You know,
so one wheelbarrow at a time.
One wheelbarrow at a time. I have a friend who worked on the Three Gorges Dam over in China when they built it. And he looked at the list of equipment that they had to build this dam, and he looked at the time frame that they had to build it. He goes, "There's no way in the world that we can build this dam in this length of time with this little bit of heavy equipment." And someone pointed out to him that they had 5,000 guys with shovels and wheelbarrows. He goes, "It is amazing." He says, "They would move almost as much dirt per day with those guys as they would with all of the industrial equipment."
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so if you break things down into their littlest elements and start working at them, you can do things that you never thought you could ever possibly. People would come into my woodworking shop when I was first getting started, and my rule to myself was it didn't matter what they asked me to build, I'd always say yes. And if I didn't know how to build it, I'd go find the people that did, and I'd learn how to do it.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, so here we are. You're woodworking. You're building lawn furniture. Which, did you design the lawn furniture? Was it your design?
No,
or you were using templates?
No, it was an old, it was actually an old Norwegian design. It's a real classic design. You see it all over the East Coast. It's a piece of canvas that starts behind your legs, go around under your butt, and goes all the way up behind your shoulders, and they fold up and you can carry them away.
Gotcha.
Some people call it a butterfly chair.
Yeah, I have seen those, and it turns out I think we have one in storage now that I think about
they're
it.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very, very, very common. And that was the nice thing about it. You know, it was something that everybody knew, something that people liked. So it was very easy to sell.
Was that as much a work project as much as it was being artistic? Because my question, I guess what I'm trying to get at is, when did it convert from working with wood to making beautiful tactile art?
So during the process of, you know, starting what I called an architectural millwork firm and working with designers, working with architects, spent a lot of times talking with architects and designers, talking about their projects. And then as you talk about their projects, you start to incorporate your ideas into whatever the projects are. And in the beginning, you're pretty humble about it. Your goal is to make the architect or the designer as happy as absolutely possible. So but after you start doing a lot of projects, then you start to pick up other people's ideas and then incorporate your own ideas into it. So by the time my architectural millwork firm was doing really well, I found that I was as much of an integral part of the design process as maybe the architect or the designer was. They sought out and asked for my input on things, which was kind of soft introduction into the design.
Gotcha. Field. Okay.
I started my own shop, when I was 20 years old. I was a young kid. I, wet behind the ears, didn't know anything, which is the really good spot to start something out. Not knowing anything's a great spot because you can do nothing but learn, and then you don't know how much you don't know, so you're not scared about it, so you go forward and start
right,
doing
right,
it.
Right, right.
So I ran my shop for just a little over 9 years. Interest rates went to 20%. The economy came to a screeching halt. I had just built onto my building and bought some new machinery and went totally broke, lost absolutely everything I had, started off with less money than I had when I graduated from high school, back to minus zero.
Reboot.
Reboot.
Gotcha.
Picked up, you're poor when you can take all your possessions, get on a Greyhound bus and move from Northern Michigan to Hickory, North Carolina and take everything with you on the Greyhound that you own.
Well, there you go. And another life experience, even after some success, I would imagine, right? You felt like you're having some successful.
I mean, I say that, but it really was really successful.
Yeah, no, it makes sense.
I had 10 employees, we were
right.
Making good money. I mean, I had money to take vacations. I went out, west, skiing in the wintertime, went backpacking, went canoeing. I mean, was living a very nice, comfortable, middle-class life, and then right. The whole thing just went away in the blink of an eye, basically.
Gotcha.
Moved to North Carolina, went back to college to get a degree in furniture production management at Catawba Valley College. Hung around in the Carolinas for about 16 years, doing all kinds of different things in the woodworking business. Worked for a furniture sample builder, built a kitchen cabinet manufacturing plant from people from scratch. They owned the building. I bought all the machinery, equipment, tools, hired and trained all the employees, and started putting production out the door. Got in an argument with the guy who was the principal about how much I thought my compensation should be. There was a big gap between what I wanted and what he was willing to pay, and I quit because George is kind of pig-headed sometimes.
Yes, yeah.
Went back to
most
work for
artists
myself.
Are.
Went back to work for myself. Decided I didn't know enough about marketing. Went to work for a guy doing some marketing. He manufactured router bits for routers. And I put myself out of a job in about 3 weeks. I happened to just luck into a place that wanted a huge amount of router bits. So the guy said, I can't do anymore. I don't need you anymore. He says, but here's an office. Do whatever you want with it. He says, so I started thinking about, what I could do for myself. I started a little company up, not really knowing what I was doing, called Sell America, which was to sell anything that was from America anywhere in the world, was my idea. I was at my house one day, and my mom stopped by, and my father's internment flag from when he passed away in the military was laying on the coffee table. I was shuffling some stuff around out of boxes. She says, I can't believe, as long as you've been in the woodworking business, you've never made a nice box for that flag. So the very next morning, I got up, went out in the shop, made this very nice box to put the flag in to make my mother happy, because everybody knows that if your mother's not happy, nobody's happy. So made the box and made my mother happy. And one of my neighbors stopped in a couple days after I made it, and he says, my God, that's a beautiful box. My brother-in-law is in the funeral home business, and he was just asking me the other day if I knew anybody who made boxes to put internment flags in. And so he and I jumped in his car, went over, showed it to his brother-in-law, who instantly bought some. I went back to my little garage shop and blasted out a few, enough to make him happy, put over his funeral home. He showed it to some other people. I started investigating what the market was. Long story short, 3 years and 3 days later, I sold the company for a huge big check, had 2,500 accounts coast to coast. And I sold the company, had a contract with the Air Force and had a contract with the Army to produce the product. My problem was I had no cash flow. So I was looking for an investor. I thought was really, really strong. And the 2 days before we were supposed to sign the deal, says to me, says, nope, not interested in investing, but I'll buy your company for you. So that's how I sold the company. That product is my design and has sold over 1 million units now. By far my most successful design so far.
There you go. Wow. Okay, so minds are blown here.
So I became an official bum.
Yeah, why not for a little while.
Started buying and selling Arabian horses.
There's the horse thing.
Started training horses. If you're looking for a really fast way to get rid of a lot of cash really, really quick and have a great time, start playing in the horse business.
Okay.
It's a very quick way to do that.
There you go.
But I had an incredible amount of fun. Riding huge amounts of riding. Was riding endurance rides, 50-mile rides and 100-mile rides. We'd probably ride every 3 or 4 weeks we'd do a ride somewhere. On the off weekends, we'd just go out in the mountains and just plain ride.
Nice. That sounds pretty fun, actually.
So after about 4 or 5 years and wandered around, went to Europe a couple times, just goofing off, decided I should go back to work. My arrangement in North Carolina was kind of falling apart. So I went back to Michigan, started a business installing kitchen cabinets and making Corian countertops and plastic laminate countertops for commercial and residential use. Did that for about 6-7 years. The economy was starting to crash again. George says, "Oh, I've seen this happen before." So George bailed and and closed down shop and got out when he still had at least had some tools left this time
around. Right, right.
Didn't have much cash, but at least had my tools. Went to work for a camp in Michigan called Camp Tush Mahita, which stands for Touch, Smell, Hear, Taste. It's a camp kind of like what Enchanted Hills is here. It's a camp for blind kids. We were pretty progressive about it. We started right off the bat hiring as many blind employees as we could. At one point in time in the running of the camp, I think right at about 70% of our employees were blind. And ran summer programs very similar to what Enchanted Hills runs here. And so that gave me 5 years worth of experience of doing that. By the time I left Michigan in 2009, the unemployment rate in the state of Michigan was around 20%. There wasn't any money left to do absolutely anything in Michigan. Moved to Minnesota, went to work for Blind Incorporated, which is a private rehabilitation center, one of the three NFB centers. They have one in Colorado, one in Louisiana, and the one in Minneapolis. Worked for them for about 2.5 years. I wrote my brother an email about, 6 months into working there. I says, if I last a year here working here, it'll be a miracle. I made it 2.5 years before them and I parted and went separate directions.
Gotcha.
Was running a small art gallery of my own in Minneapolis doing architectural millwork restoration work. And Brian Besham called me up one day and said, would you like to convert an old grape crushing barn on the Enchanted Hills property in Napa, California into an art center? And that's what tweaked my interest and got me at Enchanted Hills where we're sitting and talking today.
And ladies and gentlemen, that is part one of getting to know George Wurtzel. I wanna finish this part. The next part, we're going to talk about what you do here, the kids, and then the off-season camp, so you know what's happening. But before we finish, I have one question for you that we're going to talk about real quick. Because you just gave us a lot of very interesting things. You've led a very, what I would say, interesting life. And when we first started talking about this podcast at the beginning of the summer, I used the word amazing. And you mumbled under your breath a little bit that you didn't really like the word amazing. And I've been thinking about that all summer because I was trying to pinpoint what was going on there as far as using the word amazing. And what occurred to me is someone who doesn't have sight and who has all the experiences and the things that you have done would, what you could say, has had an amazing experience or amazing life, amazing gift to do art. But then you add the factor that you are blind, and that isn't even in a discussion in what you're doing. You just do things and people see that. that adds another element of amazingness to your story and what's happening. When people see your art and are able to see what you've been able to do to the barn, and the tools, your teaching abilities, all of these things that are combined together to make something that is truly amazing. Don't get me wrong. But I also kind of understand why you wouldn't like that word, and I want to know a little bit of your philosophy on your life and why it is, what is it, why did you say that when I said that you didn't really like the word amazing, I guess is the question.
I have an extreme dislike for the word amazing. It's way overused. If you look at some of the art pieces that I've done and some of the furniture pieces that I've done, and you want to say that those are beautiful, wonderful, enriching, amazing, I'm pretty content with that. But if you then say that George Wurtzel is amazing because he does that as a blind person, then I take offense to that, because I don't think the blindness is a factor in what I do. What I do is good because I've spent 40 plus years of my life perfecting my craft. If you go talk to incredibly good musicians and ask them, how did you get to be as good as you are? And they'll say, because I spent a huge amount of time perfecting my craft.
I practiced
until my fingers bled. And I've done the same thing. I've practiced, I've learned, I've made huge efforts in educating myself about my craft. I used to pay a reader 4 hours a week to do nothing but read articles onto tape that I wanted to, you know, listen to that were in the trade journals. This was long before you could get all that trade journal stuff online.
Right. Audio
today,
described.
When you want to know anything about anything you're interested in, my gosh, there's everything you want to know online about it. I mean, people have digitized stuff back into the 1800s that you can go back and read. You know, people today are at such an advantage to learn about whatever your craft is, whatever you want to be. But I to say that George Wurtzel is amazing, no, George Wurtzel is not amazing. George Wurtzel has been a very hard worker to get to where he is today, and spent a huge amount of time, you know, learning and educating himself.
Excellent answer. I agree with you 100% on your answer, and understand where you're coming from. I'm sure it's something you hear often, though, I would imagine. And that's why it can be frustrating on that level. Your work is beautiful. What you do is on another level. That's what I'm going to say. And there are people that are just great at what they do, and they practice that greatness and are able to take it to another level. And that's kind of what I would describe, you know, the craftsman thing, being able to just create amazing things out of nothing, or out of a little bit, let's say. And you have that incredible ability, as well as an incredible ability to teach and to pass that knowledge on. I've been able to see a little bit of this firsthand and hear how other people interact with you and talk about your skills up there at the barn, which is what we're going to get to next in part 2 of Getting to Know George Wurtzel. So that's coming up next. Thank you for listening to Everything EHC. We're going to definitely get down into the nitty-gritty of what George Wurtzel does here during the Enchanted Hills camp sessions, along with his own off-season camps. We're going to talk about that next. Okay, so you're listening to Everything EHC. This is Maceo. I'm out. Please continue on to the next podcast for George Wurtzel.